Hello and welcome. We are Restoration Church in beautiful Prescott, Arizona. Thank you for joining us. My name is Nate Huss, and I am stoked you are tuning in to our teaching of the week. If you are new, so glad you found us. If you haven't already and would like to learn a little bit more about us, jump over to restorationaz.org. And all right, let's grab our Bibles and dive into this week's teaching.
Today is a day to remember, to celebrate. You know, as I think about teaching on Easter, it kind of reminds me of high school. And I went through this phase where I watched the same movie every single night to fall asleep. At 17, I decided I didn't like my bed anymore. I was going to sleep on the couch. And so I did. And I would make myself, this is really profound, a hot dog and egg burrito every night. And I'd watch the movie Cool Runnings. It was a glorious existence. It's a great movie, great combination. Just like, you know, anything could be wrong in life. And I could just kind of lay on the couch and eat my burrito and watch that movie and I'd be fine. The only regret I think I have in my life is that year I didn't live at Lake Powell for like a month. I tried to convince my parents I would be fine. I would just go from houseboat to houseboat at Lake Powell and meet people. I like meeting people in that way and it'd be an adventure. I didn't do it. But I still have Cool Runnings to hold on to. You're like, what in the world does this have to do with anything? I'm still trying to figure it out right now. Just kidding, I know. Easter and teaching on Easter is sort of like rewatching the same movie. And if you rewatch a boring movie that has no point, it's awful. You wouldn't do that. Today, I'm not going to tell you probably anything that you don't know. Most of you know why you're here. Most of you have heard the account of the death and the burial of Jesus. Most of you have heard that it is said that he rose from the grave. He rose from the dead 3 days later. So it's nothing new. It's like watching a movie again. But with the best of movies, and none compares to the truths in the scriptures about our King, the richness and depth of what is built into that story, in this case, a true story, only grows in its meaningfulness and how it impacts the everyday stuff of our lives. I don't know, maybe I do know, you've probably watched young kids play pretend. Use their imagination, which seems to be happening less and less because they just are on screens all the time. But in the beautiful moments that they're using their imagination, they're making something up, they're playing a game, there's something really good about it. There's something cute about it. Unfortunately, in our culture, it seems as if adults kind of never stop playing pretend. There's some in our world doing this. Have you ever been around a delusional adult that is still hung up in some concept of reality that is very far from the truth? It could be a family member, a friend, maybe yourself, who knows? But at that point, it's not cute. There's a day when playing pretend is no longer the way that it should be. In the scriptures, Paul says that of all people in the entire world, of all belief systems, of all ways of life, the people that should be pitied, which is just a great word, the people that should be pitied the most are Christians if what we just sang, if what we believe to be true is not indeed true. I love how Jared Wilson says this. He says this, if the resurrection is not true, we should all stay home. Religion makes a lame hobby. I wholeheartedly agree with that. There is nothing about Christianity worth pursuing if the resurrection of Christ is not real. And there's all kinds of people in this room and will be throughout the rest of the services today. There's some of you that are at a place where you are fully trusting. You have full faith in Jesus. There's some of you that would like to trust Jesus, but life just makes that challenging. There's some of you that are here because you have to be to appease somebody or because it's that time of year. Like there's a variety of thoughts and ideas about Jesus in this room. And often on Easter, somebody in my position will sit here and read from the scriptures and try to convince you about why you should believe in this Christ. We'll read in the Gospels, and there's this word that's used multiple times, witnesses. And it's really fascinating as we read the gospel account, because what they do is they use women first as witnesses of the resurrection of Jesus in a day when legally a woman as a witness meant nothing. And there's this actual deep beauty in what the authors of the scriptures are doing in this case. And so we'll read in the gospels about the witnesses that saw Jesus die and then saw him again walking. And often on Easter morning, somebody teaching or preaching will do so from the perspective of those witnesses so that you might make a choice to believe in this Christ. But I'm not going to do that today. Instead, there's this reality that as you sit in the seats you're sitting in, as you stood and you sang and you worshiped, there's witnesses filling this room. People whose lives have actually, really, truthfully been changed by the living presence of Jesus. And so I could read from the scriptures, which I'll do in a minute, but first I want to do something odd for me because I'm kind of a boring person. And I'm going to ask you some questions and I want you to answer, but there's a couple rules, okay? One, you just have to answer in the way that's you. So if you're an excited, happy, exuberant person like Nate, you could cheer and do whatever you want to do that Nate might do. I'm not like that. I might slowly raise my hand. If you're like me, you can do that. The primary rule is this: only answer if this is actually true. But if it is true, answer. Okay? First question. How many of you were without hope, but now, because of Jesus, have it? So, there we go. How many of you were lost in life with no direction, and Jesus has provided what was needed? Let's go. That's a good one. I like that. How many of you have witnessed the miraculous power of prayers Jesus has answered where there is no other explanation other than him? Lastly, how many of you have actually seen, and do not answer yes, do not cheer if it is not true, have actually seen your life changed because of the presence of Jesus? I love that. So many of you are real witnesses to the fact that Jesus is no longer in the grave. This is not a story that we read about from thousands of years ago that is not prevalent in this moment. This is not a made up, fictitious idea about somebody that was made up so that we could all waste time and money and effort and the air in our lungs to sing songs that don't matter. What we're doing today is praising and worshiping and taking an oxygen from the God that created this universe, that gave up his life, separated from this earth, took on human form to sacrifice himself to then conquer sin and death and Satan from the grave. This is something real, something worth celebrating. We've been studying this book of Exodus, if you've been with us, for quite some time now. Today we're going to wrap it up very briefly. Exodus 35 through 40 is the text this morning. And to catch you up very quickly, I'm not going to read all five chapters. But what has happened is that God's people were in oppression. They were in the midst of injustice. They were slaves. Their lives were miserable. They were being murdered and abused and killed. And they're crying out to God, and this God hears because he loves people. And so he comes in and he saves them from the world power at that time. He frees them from slavery and is going to offer them an entire new life. And then we get to Exodus 35 through 40, and what happens in that passage is that God has them build this thing called the tabernacle, which is basically like a temple, but a portable one, because they're not in their new home yet. But God wants to provide his presence in a way for his people. Now, I want to read a bit of that account, Exodus 40, verse 33. Next, Moses set up the surrounding courtyard for the tabernacle and the altar and hung a screen for the gate of the courtyard. So Moses finished the work. The cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Moses was unable to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud rested on it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. The Israelites set out whenever the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle throughout all the stages of their journey. If the cloud was not taken up, they did not set out until the day it was taken up. For the cloud of the Lord was over the tabernacle by day, and there was a fire inside the cloud by night, visible to the entire house of Israel throughout all the stages of their journey. So not too long before this, they're in the midst of slavery and oppression, and they're crying out to God, going, God, where are you? Now they're in this camp, which is really a massive city, much larger than Prescott and Prescott Valley and Chino Valley and all the surrounding areas combined. And they're not going, God, where are you? They see God. He's provided his presence in this cloud and this tent of meeting and this tabernacle where he will be housed of sorts. But they see him from a distance. And he's accessible. Anyone can go to him, but they have to travel a little bit. And God is not accessible to everyone at any moment. It's different. It's limited. Eventually, that tabernacle would give way to the temple, and God would do exactly what he said. He would provide the promised land. They would build the temple, and now it was permanent, and God's presence would rest in the temple. And there they could worship. They would go on pilgrimages to be in the presence of God. There was always this place, no matter the time of year, they could go to where God's presence could be found. Yet that too was limited. Here's a diagram of the temple. And what you'll notice, even if you can't read this, what you can see are the shapes, the layers containing God's presence from the innermost place out. And there's restrictions. There's a court of the Gentiles, the foreigners. There's a court for the women. There's a court for the Israelites, and then the Levites, and then the priests who are presenting certain sacrifices at certain times of the year. And then at the very center core of all of these layers that you can think of as obstacles and gates, obstructions to the presence of God, there the presence of God rests. And one man, one day out of the year, one time, would go in to that place, separated by this curtain. And so while God's presence was indeed there for them, it was incredibly limited. They could travel to it. They could see it. They could go near to it. A priest on their behalf would present the offerings and sacrifices, but they did not have access fully. Even though God was their God and he was in their midst and he was working for them, they did not get to be with this God personally, maybe the way that we've come to know it. Then we fast forward thousands of years, same temple, same concept, same diagram. And Jesus comes along the scene and he's destroying misconceptions about God. He's actually deconstructing the modern then ideas of religion and what it meant to follow Yahweh God. And not shockingly, the religious and political leaders of the day don't like it because they benefit a lot from the current religious structure. And so they're opposing Jesus. We read about it in John chapter 2. I'm going to read beginning in verse 18. John chapter 2, verse 18. We read this. So the Jews replied to Jesus, "What sign of authority will you show us for doing these things, tearing down the normal religious things of that day?" Jesus answered, "Destroy this sanctuary or temple, and I will raise it up in 3 days." Therefore the Jews said, "This sanctuary took 46 years to build, and you will raise it up in 3 days." It would not be long after this moment, this controversy, this conflict, wouldn't be too long before Jesus would find himself hanging on a cross because of that conflict. More so because he was choosing to give up his life for the lives of those around him, for our lives. As Jesus is hanging on the cross, we read the account of it in Matthew 27. If you want to read along, we'll put this on the screen as well. Beginning in verse 45, "From noon until 3 in the afternoon, darkness came over the whole land About 3 p.m, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani?" That is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing there heard this, they said, "He's calling for Elijah." Immediately one of them ran and got a sponge, filled it with sour wine, fixed it on a reed, and offered him a drink. But the rest said, "Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." Jesus shouted again with a loud voice and gave up his spirit. Suddenly, the curtain of the sanctuary was split in two from top to bottom. The earth quaked and the rocks were split. The tombs were also opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And they came out of the tombs after his resurrection, entered the holy city, and appeared to many. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and the things that had happened, they were terrified and said, "This man really was God's son." Many women who had followed Jesus from Galilee and ministered to him were there, looking on from a distance. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's sons. I want to pause now because it's at this point, after he breathes his last, that he'll be taken down from that cross. He'll be transported to a tomb. There will be a stone placed in front of it, as well as guards, and Jesus' body would lay there without his heart pumping any blood, without his lungs helping him to breathe any air, fully dead for 3 days. Silence, nothing. And to feel just the weight of that, I want to just pause now in silence for 3 minutes to pray, to reflect, to count the cost, to think about the love and sacrifice of Christ. We'll go ahead and bring the lights down and rest in silence and pray for 3 minutes. Matthew chapter 27, verse 62. The next day, which followed the preparation day, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered before Pilate and said, "Sir, we remember that while this deceiver was still alive, he said, 'After 3 days, I will rise again.' Therefore, give orders that the tomb be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come, steal him, and tell the people he has been raised from the dead. Then the last deception will be worse than the first." "You have a guard of soldiers," Pilate told them. "Go and make it as secure as you know how." Then they went and made the tomb secure by sealing the stone and setting the guard. After the Sabbath, as the first day of the week was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to view the tomb. Suddenly, there was a violent earthquake because an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and approached the tomb. He rolled back the stone and was sitting on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his robe was as white as snow. The guards were so shaken from fear of him that they became like dead men. But the angel told the women, "Don't be afraid, because I know you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here, for he has been resurrected, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples he has been raised from the dead. In fact, he is going ahead of you to Galilee. You will see him there. Listen, I have told you." So departing quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy, they ran to tell his disciples the news. Just then, Jesus met them and said, "Good morning." They came up, took hold of his feet, and worshiped him. Then Jesus told them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to leave for Galilee, and they will see me there." They will see me there. You remember that diagram and inside of the depths of the layers of the layers of the layers in the Holy of Holies is where that curtain was, that when Jesus breathed his last was torn in two. And now the curtain is torn that barricaded the presence of God. And it's like a gate opened. The stone that covered the tomb along with its guards are removed, and Jesus walks out. And everything changes. From Egypt crying out, "God, where are you?" Israel crying out, "God, where are you?" To Israel not crying out, "God, where are you?" but seeing him at a distance. To with the temple pilgrimages being taken to visit, to view, to be near the presence of God, where one man could go in once a year. To this morning, where we read about witnesses that saw Jesus die and talked to Jesus after his death and walked with him on roads, to us this morning who have witnessed the presence of Jesus change lives today. This isn't a boring movie, a fake account, something not real where we're wasting our time, because religion would be a dreadfully terrible hobby. But our Jesus, our King, is alive and well. So today, as you leave this place, we celebrate. We celebrate the good news of our salvation eternally. We celebrate also the steps that we'll take the rest of this day and next week and next year, recognizing these words that he is with us always to the very end of the age. To close, I want to read this passage in Hebrews 10, 19 through 23. It says this, "Therefore, since we have boldness to enter the sanctuary through the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he has inaugurated for us through the curtain, that is his flesh, and since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed in pure water. Let us hold on to the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful."
thanks again for joining us. We hope this teaching was both encouraging and also challenging, helping us to just continue to grow in both our trust for Jesus and learning what it means to practice His way. If you'd like to partner with us, first is prayer. I mean, we deeply value the people of God joining us in prayer as we seek His kingdom and hunger for wisdom on how to best lead in the context that Jesus has called us. So if you could be praying for us, that would be massive. The second is serving. If you are looking for a church family to plug into, we would love to connect with you. And the third is through giving. Jesus has been so generous in providing a wonderful space in downtown Prescott, Arizona, to really be a light for this city and to love its people well. And if you call Restoration Church home again, or just would like to partner with us financially, you can do that by going to restorationaz.org and click the giving tab in the menu options there. So thanks again. And in closing, I just want to remind us, Jesus is the only one who is trustworthy always, no matter the moment. So press on as we continue to practice the way of Jesus.